All right, Frank, let's do it. Let's talk about the command line. Everyone loves the command line. You know I hate the command line. There's so many command lines. All the command line. I'm a GUI person, Frankie. I like a GUI because I'm a developer of GUI applications. And the reason I do that is because I like GUIs myself. I'm an IDE type of developer. I like a rich, integrated development environment. I love my Windows. I love snapping. I love clicking. I love doing stuff inside my GUIs. And the one thing I despise is the terminal, Frank. It's everybody's enemy. It's the worst.
Well, given that I'm living in a GUI world right now, I thought this is a perfect time to talk about the console. Because, okay, look, I mean, life stretch goals. I wish I wrote a GUI for everything, but I don't. I write so many console apps still. As a mobile developer, I feel like I write 10 console apps a day, just because I do. It's what happens. I should probably use Jupyter Notebooks more. But instead, I create console apps. And, you know, they usually start out kind of nice, and then I start outputting some color codes, start looking at, like, console color.red, make your errors red. And that's about as pretty as they ever get. But I was surfing the web today and ran into a cool library. And I think we should talk about a cool library to make our console apps beautiful, since I write too many of them. And it's a way to kind of like bring UI stuff into the console. We're going to be UI developers on 1970s terminals.
It's true. I would say that I do develop console apps. In fact, most recently, I've been spinning up a lot of .NET console applications. But I've been using them more as a, not as an app, more as a REPL, to be honest with you. That's actually how I've been using them. It's mostly like, oh, I have this. This is what I did recently. I was like, I had a little bit of piece of functionality and I had it in Azure Function, but I was like having problems like deploy stuff on my ARM machine. So I was like, I just needed to test this. I'm like, oh, let's do a console app and then put it out, right? And then done. I had this other one, which had zero GUI to it, right? So it was literally, I scraped all this data from Dev2 and I was like, I need to convert this JSON to another JSON. So I need to read these files, convert them, spit them out, yeah, like in the same directory, like underscore converted, like go, right? And like run it. So zero input except for like one console.write line finished. You know what I mean? Like that was, yeah. Nothing else. Those are the extent of my, because of my terminal applications, like the problem I have is that they're not super pretty, like you're saying, in general, if we can make them prettier. But then also, one of the issues I mostly have, which I don't think anything we're going to talk about today solves, is all of the arguments. Like, how are you supposed to remember all that stuff? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So two different issues, and I don't think we'll solve both of them today, but maybe we will. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, we can speak a little philosophically first, because I like to do that. Why not? UIs and command line apps are kind of fundamentally different in that a UI is an app that's always running and it's sitting there waiting for user input. Whereas most console apps, scripts, let's just call them scripts because that's what they are. They take a bunch of data at the input, do a bunch of bad stuff to it, output a bunch of bad stuff, and that's life. That's programming. So that's more, they're almost like a big function, programs that way. So that's why they have nasty command lines, because you got to fill in a bunch of data. It would be nice to pop up like a little web form. So I wrote a library, UI, a long time ago, OOUI. And it was specifically my goal. Like, I'm writing all these little command line apps, and I want to present like a little UI as easily as possible. And so I wrote the library. It's a small import and it'll bring up a web UI pretty easily. But that is not a terminal app. I can't run that on a Linux server and SSH in and get the output. Well, I could if I was better at port mapping and all that kind of crazy networking stuff, but I can't do that. I'm terrible at that stuff. So I still like to write command line apps, but they are fundamentally different. UIs and these kind of one-off pieces of junk that we write all the time.
Well, when we think about console applications too, like in our core of every single file new application, there's literally like a console.write line, right? Everything is console based, right? We are literally the experience that most people start when they start with .NET is a console application. And even if you're using a REPL of sorts, guess what it's outputting it to? It's probably a console of some sort type of thing. So like when you actually look at the system.console, I'm looking at the API Explorer, you know, I pretty much use three or four total. Write line, read line.
You use read and read line?
Yeah, oh, I'm pretty sure that's it. There is a read. Yeah, there is a read. It's sometimes a read key. Like that's pretty cool. That's probably about it, to be honest with you. I'm looking through the methods, and that's about it. So there's a lot of things. I didn't even realize there's properties, right? So inside the properties, there is background color. There's cap locks. There's errors. There's foreground color. There's window heights, number locks. There's titles. There's inputs and encodings and error redirects. And there's methods like get cursor position. There's standard input and output and reading keys and reading lines and resetting colors and setting ins and setting out of text readers and text writers and like writing stuff and like more than just strings. What do you know? There's more than reading just strings. That is wild. So there's quite a lot, but there's also not that much at the same time. Like it's not like you're building a full GUI-esque application with what's in the box of just console, right?
No, and it's pretty barbaric. If you want to do like even something like a progress bar that like shows the number 5%, then 10%, then 100%, and you want to go back and, you know, overwrite it, not take out new lines, you actually have to put literal backspaces in, you know, you feed those out through it. Yeah, it's a big nasty class because it has the redirecting for standard in, standard out, standard error. So that's three streams that you can redirect and handle. And then on top of it, there's all the ANSI functions, which are fun, which are setting the colors. And then there's a few terminal things like getting the window size. That is if you want to live the nasty life of trying to build a GUI in it. But that's too hard. You should use an awesome library because, it's step one. It's fun to make the console foreground color red. Everyone should do it. It's just better that way. But once you get beyond that, like, I was a kid. I loved ANSI drawing. I knew all the box codes to, like, draw a line in a corner and a thing. I don't remember any of that. That's too hard to remember. One must definitely use a library if one wants to make their console apps prettier. And I'm setting it as an actual goal for myself. I'm totally going to make my console apps prettier because I love some of the libraries out there and I really need to use them more.
Well, and I think to this point is that console applications don't have to be just reading and writing some text onto the screen. There can be so much more. In fact, back in the day, back in high school, so circa over 20 years ago, in my C++ days, I was writing out using the standard lib, if you will, and all the good C++ things that are out there. I and some of my high school friends were very into making console-based games. And I made card battlers, so I made a whole Mega Man card battle game. But my most epic game of all time that me and a friend of I made was a sequel to the original that him and his brother made, which was Dungeon Quest and Dungeon Quest 2. We made Dungeon Quest 3, and it had it was basically Final Fantasy. It was an entire play field that had an outline in ASCII, had little mountains, it had little waters, it had little like house figures, and you were a smiley face and you would move typing, you know, AWSD into it, you know, where you would go, and then that would move you around, and then you would do dungeon battle. And it was ginormous because how I coded it back in the day was every XY position had its own map that
that's not true.
brute forced it, if you will. I remember back in the day, but it was a huge application. It was just command line text adventure, right? This text adventures, I think, like, was it Zork or Zorb or whatever it was? There was something like that, like the original command line text adventures. Like, these could be really epic, but mine was what's ASCII that can be displayed on the screen and it was black and white, and that was it. Like, I didn't do anything else. Like, this was it. So that's why you could break through this and actually build really big things. In fact, like, you go to banks or
right.
It's basically a huge console application. It's like, press F12, and it's like, brings it, like, it's like dot matrix. It's terrible.
It's terrible, but it worked over terminals. That's how those worked. You know, they're big servers and people were just working at terminals.
Yeah.
And playing the old man card, I used to dial up into BBSs, and all those games were ANSI graphic games. And so I'm proud of you. I never had the patience to try to write a game using those, especially hard coding the position maps.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane, dude. Thankfully, I was introduced to VGA at an early age and was able to write all my terrible games in VGA.
We wrote, after that, we went to Turbo Pascal, and I was drawing stick figures and moving around on the screen, and we did like a thing. I'm gonna find it. It's on my GitHub.
Oh,
I don't think it's open source, but I will share my projects with you. Not many people have seen them. I did do a video. Here it is. Dungeon Quest.
You make these public links? No?
Should I? Oh, my God. What
badness could be in here? We all have our starting. I wish a lot more of my code was public.
Well, this
when I was
one,
younger.
One file
I'd be horrified.
8,000 lines.
Wow. Copy and paste is your friend, programmers.
The
and
header
people
file.
Complain about ChatGPT.
Oh, I mean, I can open source it. Okay, so the header file,
open source it, puppy,
is 16,000 lines of code. Okay, we're
everyone.
Doing it live. Oh god, I don't even want.
No,
to...
this is so worth it. We all right, want to see this. We're all big fans of you, James. You're in a safe place.
The license.
We're all gonna look at your
MIT license. That's fine. That's good, right? Okay. GitHub.com/JamesMontemagno. /Dungeon Quest.
Dungeon Quest. Copyright,
this.
Trademark. Someone probably already has it.
Probably. But I made this 20 plus years ago. Oh, I got to use a pass key. Hold on, everybody. I'm pass keying. Okay. Secret side tangent. Pass key on your phone. Okay. Like, if I'm on my phone, pretty great, because it's like, it just like I'm signing into a website.
All right.
It just like logs in with my face. That's pretty cool. Passkey on like your computer, not so great, because you got to like bust out your phone. You got like scan a QR code. You got to do a thing. It's not that great. All right. Dungeon Quest. It's live. It's live, people.
I have access to it. I clickety clacked. You wrote this 7 months ago. This is when you learned to program.
So this is when I used to have all these files up on my private FTP that I used to have. And that was actually because all of these files came off of floppy disks. So I have a floppy disk reader and I have a stack of floppies, and I transferred the files. So I worked with Sci. They helped me get this working inside of Visual Studio 2022.
This is exciting.
Yeah. I had a few things to work around. The key with this project is, at least, I don't know if it works on, it's a C++ file. I have no idea if it works on a Mac, but on Windows, I had to run it in the legacy console. I couldn't run it in like a new terminal because the spacing of the, if you go to the header files, you'll see how I did it. There's a lot of C outs.
Oh, I can't. This is fine code. This is honestly really fine code. I almost wish it was in C instead of C++. It would have been a little easier for you.
Yeah.
But I love all your hard-coded, I believe those are the escape codes. I don't know. I don't have all this stuff memorized at the hexadecimal level. But C9, CD, CD, BA, BA, 7F. Ooh,
yeah.
7F, that's a crazy one. Okay, that must be the control number. Hilarious. Thank you for doing this. I will get it compiling and running on the Mac.
Okay.
That's necessary. I will have a PR to you at some point tonight.
God.
So I think you've just demonstrated why we need libraries for outputting good-looking console apps, but I really appreciate that you typed all this in.
There's a lot of typing.
Pasting was power. Was
yes.
Painful, I imagine.
It was not great. There's a whole game here, Josh. I like my favorite part is in the top of the CPP file. There's a copyright 2005, so this is almost 20 years ago. We started in January, we finished in May, so this is a 5-month project. I like that I had a make believe company called PM Media, and that Josh also had a make believe company called Code Warriors, and great names. In general, so.
My little hacking group was called Code Alliance back then. So yeah, I mean, these are the kind of names you come up with at that age. So it's fine.
So let's get into how I could have made this application much prettier had I, one, written it in C# and .NET, and two, used an awesome library. You stumbled upon, I've known about this library for a while, but you stumbled upon, you know me, I'm just one with the community.
You're the hipster. You're the hipster of .NET libraries. The library I stumbled upon is called Spectre.console. It's quite a mysterious title. I love it. Turns out it is a .NET Foundation library, so I really, really should have known of it. And honestly, like, the name was familiar, but I never bothered to click any links and actually look into it. But it's an open source, MIT licensed library specifically designed to help you make your console apps look a little bit better. So at the simplest version, it makes setting colors really easy. So it has its own little markup language. It's not bad. It's like square brackets and you can say red or underline, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So just by, instead of using a console class that we're all console.writeline, you just do ansi console.write and write line and a million other things that it can do. But fundamentally, you just write ansi console. And if you're using the fancy, like, what, C# modern stuff, you can, like, probably global using this and get it really kind of crazy.
Yeah, anyway, just write. Yeah, write, yeah, markup, yeah, over, markup, yeah, line. Yeah.
Get them all into the global namespace. But I don't know if I would do that. Anyway, ANSI console, beautiful library. Let's start with number one, setting colors on things, but it can do so much more. It can do UIs. We'll get to it.
Yeah, I think the setting colors and, like, you know, having it, you know, output nice things in the library is, like, very nice as far as, like, little helper things. I do like that. There's not, like, some mysterious thing. It's like, hey, it's almost right. You're writing markup online. But I think the biggest thing when it comes to these things is the widgets, or the, as I like to call them, controls that you might output specifically. Because to me, why we love UIKit and we put up with Android, the widget system in general, is, and Windows, you know, as well. It's like when you think of WinForms, like, you think of the toolbox, right? What's in the toolbox? And I think that is why folks adopt UI frameworks is because of that. And when I look at the web, there's a bunch of stuff built in HTML, sure, but then there are great libraries like Fluent UI and, like, other things like that, like, you know, Material Design UI, and, like, you can basically import a huge toolkit into your web app that enables you to do cool stuff. So if me as a GUI developer really appreciates that part of it, because I don't want to learn that. I don't want a canvas, okay? I don't want to draw on a canvas. Frank will draw on all the canvases. Yes. I will not. So what I liked about this is that, yeah, there's not only widgets, but there's other things that normal GUI applications would do, like prompts, for example. And then I would say the widgets also would extend into displaying, like, grids of data, for example, or doing progress or status, like you're talking about, right? Like, nobody wants to figure out how to do that or draw that on the display, but you do want to do it, basically. I think of when I'm, a good example of this is I am making a Docker container and I'm uploading it, right? It's like doing all the layers, and it's like, all these layers and things are happening. Like, you want that UI to give some sort of representation of what's going on, even if it's just compiling or uploading or doing something. You don't want to just have a little nothing. You don't want to, the worst, as we know, even in mobile applications, is the user does something and then nothing happens.
Right. Or
something has to happen in the application.
Well, it's a little bit funny because the old Unix philosophy was that if everything goes well with the execution of a command line app, then the output should be blank. It's just an old thing, but I'm glad we're past that. No, these days you put animated emoji bouncing on a progress bar, doing all the things. At first, I was always a little bit against them too. Again, an old timer, because often I would like stream the output of these apps to logs, and you don't want to get a bunch of ANSI drawing code in your logs. You just want text in your logs. So another good reason for using a good library instead of rolling all this stuff yourself is a lot of these libraries do detection of the terminal to see whether they're supporting color output and things like that, and what they're capable of, so that when you are just streaming it to a text file, hopefully you won't get all the color codes and all that stuff. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that because that was always kind of a pet peeve of mine of why I don't add a lot of animation, or at least why I tell myself I don't add a lot of animation to my terminal apps, in case you want to actually capture it. But I do have to go. You're going ahead with the panels and the fun things and the UI things, but I have to mention one more fun color thing, which just everyone should just use. They have a special way to just print out exceptions, and it colorizes the exception nicely.
That's nice.
I was saying earlier that I like to do like console foreground color red. That was always for printing out exceptions, and they have a much prettier exception printer. Use their much prettier exception printer. Just import this library and use it. At least I'm saying that to myself. Future Frank, use this for all your exception printing.
I like that. Yeah, I think those little sort of shortcuts are super duper nice. Like I was saying, hey, we could write an entire text prompt or a selection prompt or things like that, but they have a great prompt system that's like, give me a selection prompt, give me a title, give me the choices, text, and here's the choices that you display, and it'll output it very nicely and then return something back to you. Very similar to the entire system of UIKit and Android and Windows of like, let me get a message box and it just handles it for you automatically, right? I think as GUI developers, that's why I'm appreciative of the Spectre console or other libraries like it, because it is turning the terminal, which I don't like because it's normally just input and output of text, into something that's a little bit more user-friendly and GUI based. And I would appreciate that as a user if I'm going to run it.
Absolutely. I mean, they just have fun things like the charts, so you can do a little bar graph real easily. I've coded bar graphs in ANSI before. They're the worst, so it's wonderful to just have that baked into the library. They have things like word wrap. You won't believe it, but I actually like it's really nice to have word wrap, to have something that can contain the text so it's not always sprawling across the entire console. And the most important control they have is tables, so that you can actually just, classic HTML styling. Now we can do it at the console. Build out your UI using tables, which dynamically size themselves and fit to the console correctly in all the ways that you think they should, because there's programmers wrote this library, and programmers, we all want to do our layouts with tables. It's just easier. And so you can do all that very easily. But all that is kind of like the still the one-time script execution style. Like we start with some inputs to the thing, we do some processing, maybe we do some progress bars, and we output stuff, and then we get to the end and we stop outputting. They also have, though, and this is what you want, James. This has your name written all over it, is ANSI console.live, I believe they call it. And this is where you can start mutating objects, and now where it starts acting like a proper user interface. So you can create a table object, tell it to go live, and now you can start messing around with that table, and it will update the screen just like a GUI should. So I think that like all the color stuff, I want to give full props because that stuff is the stuff I will use day in and day out. But this live mode changes everything. The live mode lets you build actual interactive apps and things like that. And I do keep skipping over prompting, but I love this live mode.
No, live mode is like really, really neat. Yeah. I mean, I think that being able to have something that looks and feels like an app, part of an application inside the console when you're using it is a big benefit at the end of the day.
Yeah, because, you know, at some point, what's the easiest UI element you want? You want a progress bar. I've written so many apps that output a dot just so I know the thing is alive and beating and all that kind of stuff. If I'm feeling really fancy, I try to calculate the actual percentage and put it up there. But yeah. Instead of that, they actually just have like a little spinner control. And you can say, you know, here, just ANSI console. I forget the exact syntax. Sorry, I'm still reading the manual. ANSI console dot something output little activity indicator. And that'll be wonderful for me because I really just need to know, are you still alive? Are you still functioning? I don't need a full GUI. I just need that heartbeat there.
Yeah.
Doing its thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's like super, you know, nice. And not only like as we were talking through this, like, you know, this in works across all different consoles, like on Mac, Windows, and Linux, right? I think that's the other part too is, yeah, you know, system.console does, but like you were saying earlier is there's obviously different intricacies between different terminals across different operating systems. So actually streamlining that into a single library makes a lot of sense. Just sort of like, you know, MAUI or Flutter or React, you know, like basically like what's the abstraction on top of the different UIs inside of it. But, you know, my favorite part actually of the Spectre console is actually just the website. So spectreconsole.net, we'll put it in the show notes. But my favorite part of it is actually the little example that they have, because it's like an example that like just shows a bunch of stuff. Like here's like tables and trees, and here's charts, and here's the exceptions, and like here's the colors that we can output, and here's like word wrapping, and here's like, you know, rows and columns. You know, I think that's like really neat. And here's emojis and, you know, all these nice little things that are inside of there. So being able to just see that as a high level is pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, one of the funniest ones, well, there is Canvas. So like you said, you can draw. So I can be in my happy place and I can draw my own custom UIs. But they also have just like nice abstractions for, I think it's called like iRenderable or something like that, where you can make your own objects draw themselves or output themselves to the console. So nice little niceties like that baked in. And then they have ridiculous things, just truly ridiculous, where you can render an image to the console.
Yeah.
I used to do that as like a fun little hack and like, look at me, I'm fancy. I can render an image to the console, and it's just baked into this library. Kind of hilarious that it's all just there. Go ahead. I'll put images to the console. Why the heck not?
Yeah, I think that it's pretty amazing just the sort of technology that's built in and the type of widgets that are available, because not only are there things like you said, like Canvas and Canvas images, but there's other things like there's an entire calendar, for example. There's this like breakdown chart, right? Like, why do we have a calendar? It's crazy.
I almost talked over you there. I'm like, it has a calendar control. How weird is that? I don't know how UI controlly it is, because they are playing this fine line between, are we just outputting data or are we a fully user interactive UI system? Because we have a friend, Miguel. Ring, ding, ding, ding the bell. Miguel de Acasa has written a library, terminal.gui. I think that's what it's currently called. It takes a very different approach, but that was always 100% UI focused. So you have text boxes and check boxes and buttons and things like that. That is definitely going 100% into, I am building a full-blown user interface for my console app. Whereas this library, Spectre Console, is riding that fine line between, you can do some interactive stuff, but mostly output, but some of it can be interactive. Good luck, buddy.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. I like that it's like it's lighter weight. Because Miguel's library, you kind of like, you go into his mode, the screen turns all blue, and then you can't remember how to get out of it. That's That was always my problem, at least. Whereas this, you're just putting some shiny yellow borders around a table, and it's a good place to start.
Well, I mean, I think that's the cool part, the flexibility part of it. Like, yeah, like Miguel's, I guess it's the GUI CS team, I would say now.
Okay.
Like you said, they have, you know, color pickers and combo boxes and list views and menu bars and matches boxes. And like, it's like basically, it's basically
all blown.
Win forms, but in the GUI, in a terminal basically inside of there, which is pretty cool. And so it's like, how far do you need to go, right? What's the flexibility that you need? What are you building? And if you did need something like this, is more reminiscent of those finance applications or grocery store applications that you just see. It's like a big, you know, blue background or gray background, and has like press F12, click here. You know what I mean? Like the old, you know, like I said, old terminal type of applications that people built. But I think it's pretty neat. Like there's all sorts of like keyboard listening events and, you know, tapping around. It just like also works everywhere, which is really neat. And you could tell some of the inspiration. Obviously, like Miguel being a big UIKit fan and a big iOS fan, there's has to be some inspiration there. Also, like Monotouch.dialog, for example, which, you know, maybe a lot of listeners don't know at this point. Monotouch.dialog was the like OG abstraction over Table View, which is one of the maybe best controls ever built. I think UI Table View might be the best control ever built. It's up there. It's top three.
Well, we'll make this argument in its favor. The Mac OS settings app has become Table View based.
Yeah,
we're still writing basically that.
It's everywhere. The Table View is everywhere. And if you're,
it was an innovation and it's stuck around.
It's true. I mean, there's always been a list view. Always been a list view. List views solid. It's a solid control. But UI Table View, bam, it's way up there. It did a lot of things that were super hard, especially when I was doing Android development and iOS development. UI Table View was just so streamlined in this. In fact, almost every settings application or every app I ever built that has settings in it used Monotouch.dialog because it was like so good to be able to do that. And the whole idea was the settings view, the settings application on iOS is basically just only UI Table View. It's like basically the entire app is only UI Table View, and that's it. So I don't know who all built Monotouch.dialog. I don't know if it's just Miguel and other people contributed to it later, because I'm pretty sure it was in his GitHub name for a while. But Monotouch.dialog was this great abstraction that enabled you to like rapidly build a UI Table View without having to learn UI Table View. You got like an abstraction over it that was only for iOS, which funnily enough, but it really was really cool. But it also enables you to add like attributes, kind of like if you're using SQLite-net, you can add like primary key attributes, this other stuff. You can basically say, hey, here's my class, here's a monkey, go, here's attributes of what I want you to do, and just like generate the UI Table View for me, and it would just do it. So that was pretty neat. So anyways, to this point, I kind of feel like there's a lot of inspiration happening here, in my opinion.
What I want, James, is the quickest and easiest way I can put a half good looking UI up, because the moment it takes any effort to build a UI, I just don't do it. I start console.writelining, almost done, ... almost more done, ... because I don't know, it's not laziness, because what it really is a lot of these scripts are one-offs, so you're going to use it for a day or you're going to use it for 2 days, and it's okay if it just floods the console with a bunch of blah blah blah, because the alternative is you spend 2 days writing a UI for it, and now you spent 4 days instead of what should have been 2 days. So we want quick ways to write UIs. Monotouch Dialog, it was great because not only did it look like a half-decent iOS app because they were all Table View-based, but it was really easy to write. You could write a pretty complicated UI in very few lines of code. It was a well-designed library. And I think that's what we're saying about Spectre Console here and Terminal.gui. I'm going to remember that name one of these times. Terminal.gui.
Terminal.gui. Yeah, because it used to just be GUI CS and it did change it, so it's good. Well, I just am glad that there's things out here in the world that are happening. So it's cool.
colors in the terminal. I have way too many terminals open. Yes. More colors, please, everyone. Let's all take a dependency on Spectre console. Just put in your directory.props.
Yes. All right. Well, I think it's going to do it for our console base. I mean, maybe now I'd love consoles. So maybe I love terminals. We'll see. I do think that we...
console app.
Well, I think we need to do a hackathon where we convert Dungeon Quest into Spectre console app.
Could we please use math so we don't have to redraw the map for every
Yeah,
position?
Of course. Yeah, okay. We'd use math. It'd be super
let's,
sweet.
Let's
it'd
use
be like
the math.
there'd be a class that's called like map.cs, and it's just like it'll draw the map to where you're at. You pass in an XY, done. Yeah, it'll do it. It'll use the cool border property. It'll be awesome, and then it could like give you live updates to where you are. Like, oh, I'm in a swampy area. I'm in Nutria or whatever like the towns are. I may have written all the text, but I was like 16, 15 years old. So I don't know if I didn't write good
great.
Story.
I can't wait to play.
Okay.
I'm going to get the PR up that gets a compiling on a Mac.
I can't wait.
We'll get playing.
Last thing I want to talk about is that we have been using the Adobe Podcast Enhance speech for just one podcast so far, and we're going to use it again for this podcast. Okay. I did have someone text me, Eric, that said, "Hey, did you do some processing on the audio? It feels like the speed is upped." But then Eric said, "No, actually, he checked into Spotify, and he was at 1.2. So it wasn't me; it was that. So we should be there. What I'm doing is so here's an inside baseball is like Adobe Podcast, podcast.adobe.com. There's an enhanced mode, and what I've been doing is I've been taking the video. And I've been taking the audio and I've been not doing any post-processing on it on my end at all. I've just been shoving it in Adobe Podcast. Now, I am lowering the percentage on Adobe Podcast because Frank and I already have good mics. So the default is 90. I've been lowering it to 75. So I do want your feedback. Feel free to leave feedback by writing into the show, hitting us up on Twitter, or on this YouTube video at youtube.com/@mergeconflictfm. You can also leave a comment on it and let us know what you think of the audio. And we already have good mics. Hello. We have decent mics. Before, what I would do is very minimal post-processing. I would bring it into Audacity. I would add the bumpers. I would take my audio and I would do a little bit of reverb removal on it because I have like kind of a room that is relatively padding. It depends on where I'm at. And then I would do some limiting on me and Frank in case there are any spikes because we do have better mics. But I didn't really do a lot of post-processing. And Zencastr does a little bit of post-processing, mostly for leveling. But I would take the raw files and kind of output them there. So anyways, that's what I've been doing. Let us know what you think in the somewhere, anywhere on the internet. Just let us know what you think. And we'll go from there. Sound good, Frank?
Sound good. Is that a pun? We'll find out if it sounded good. I do have to interject because I love the advancement of the technology here. Back when I was leveling audio, I used NPR. Had an app out there called the Levelator. And I always used NPR's Levelator. So I like that we're using Adobe now.
I recently... install Levelator 2, which exists onto the it still exists on the internet. It's like a Windows app. Now, I did use this recently because I was doing some processing of some audio where it was a bunch of different people. So it was a bunch of different folks, and they were like back to back to back. So it was like kind of demo one, demo two, demo three. So they're all doing using different mics. So I took all their audio and I put it into a WAV file, just back, and then I levelated it, and then I took that file, and then I put it in the enhanced speech, and then I brought it back and I sliced it up. It was like a big process, but one thing that Zencastr does do is it does levelize our audio, which is great and very helpful. But yeah, Levelator, I mean I've used Levelator for so long. There's so many great podcasting things, but a lot of stuff is just built in now under the hood, which is wild how advancement it is like click a button, post process, done. All right, that's gonna do it for this week's Merge Conflict. So until next time, I'm James Montemagno.
And I'm Frank Krueger. Thanks for watching and listening.
Peace.